Will you join with me in a moment of prayer? God, may it be your words that are spoken this day. May it be your words that are heard. In your name we pray, amen. The day after my 7th birthday, my mom and my 2 older brothers and I gathered in the basement of our home in Arlington, Virginia at that time around the TV and with the rest of the country and much of the rest of the world, we watched the funeral of John F. Kennedy, 1963, November 25th. My father was not there with us at that time. My father was just a few miles away in D.C. He was then a major in the Army, and he worked for what was known as DESOPS, DC Operations, and his task as a major at DESOPS was basically to coordinate all sort of major functions that happened, military functions that happened in Washington, D.C. And so upon this major fell the responsibility for coordinating the funeral of our slain president. I have heard my father over the years talk about this event. There are many things that he did in his military career of which he was most proud of, but I believe that those days, those 3 days from November 22nd and November 25th, are 3 of the days that he is most proud of the work that he did in the military. And over the years, he has given many a talk to many a group about what went into the planning of that funeral and the execution of that funeral. Little tidbits such as when Mrs. Kennedy announces that she would like to have an eternal flame burning at his gravesite, he had to solve the question first of what is an eternal flame, and secondly, how in the next 48 hours would we execute that so that it would happen for indeed eternity. But my favorite story of all that my father tells of that funeral was of a plans that had to be changed. The original plans had the casket on the, is it called the caisson? I'm not sure, but being pulled behind 4 horses across the Memorial Bridge, crossing the Potomac, and as the casket reached the center of the Memorial Bridge, the Air Force was going to do a flyover with the lost man formation. So there, in this very dramatic moment, that as the casket is by itself on the middle of the bridge, crossing over to Arlington Cemetery, would be the fallen man formation of the Air Force. Beautiful moment, would be powerful on TV, would capture everybody. And my father received a phone call from a person and said, Major Turner, and he identified himself as Major Turner, I'm not sure how familiar you are with horses. And my father said, well, not really much. He said, Major Turner, are you aware what happens when a horse spooks? And my father said, no. He said, Major Turner, horses, when they spook, tend to rear up, meaning that when they rear up and they're pulling a trailer of some sort, that trailer will also go up. Major Turner, are you aware what might cause a horse to spook? I'm sure you're going to tell me. Certainly a flyover of jets flying at supersonic speed at the time when horses are in the middle of a bridge would be the kind of thing that would cause a horse to spook. Big gulp from my father. Major Turner, are you prepared for those horses to spook, for the trailer to buck, for the casket to roll off and go into the Potomac River? Needless to say, those plans were changed. I tell you this because these were trained horses, but it is within a horse's nature to spook in the midst of chaos. And I share that with you because there is a detail that Mark gives us, and he's the only one of the 4 Gospels in telling the story about the procession into Jerusalem that gives this tiny little detail. And that tiny little detail is that when Jesus says, go to the village across from you, as soon as you enter, you will find a colt tethered, one that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it. They brought the colt to Jesus, spread their coats on it, and he mounted. A colt that has never been ridden. Those of you that know horses know that riding a horse for the first time, much less a young horse, a colt, is not something in which you expect the most calm of realities to happen. Horses buck, horses throw. They don't like having someone on their back. It is not in their nature to enjoy this. So here we have a colt that has never been ridden, 500 to 1,000 pounds of utterly unbridled energy sitting between Jesus' legs. And what's he going to do? He is going to ride it. And not only is he going to ride it, he is going to ride it through cheering crowds, yelling and singing and waving palm branches in front of a horse's eyes, throwing clothes in front of it. And oh, by the way, on the other side of the town, you might well hear trumpets blaring, horse hooves going, as the emperor's representative, Pontius Pilate, also makes his way into Jerusalem. This is a casket into the Potomac moment. It is chaos not just waiting to happen, but almost guaranteed to happen. And this is the stuff that Mark loves. Chaotic moments. The first two-thirds of the gospel are filled with chaotic moments. In chapter 1, when John says in chapter 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us," and Matthew and Luke give us the wonderful birth narratives that our Christmas story comes from, Mark begins chapter 1 with a battle royale. Jesus is a force more powerful than the world's evil could muster. And in the very first verses of Mark, there is a person possessed by a demon, possessed by that which is evil, that comes up to Jesus and starts yelling at Jesus. And as we have it in Mark's gospel, Jesus basically says, "Shut up." But probably with a bit stronger language than that. And cast that demon out. And there in the rest of chapter 1, there's more demons being cast out. Jesus going into battle in the desert with the desert. And animals, oh my gosh, just a few chapters later, animals enter into the picture because there's a demon-possessed person that comes up to Jesus. And when he casts out the demon, it's not just one, it is a legion of demons. So strong are the forces of evil in the world. And Jesus takes that legion of demons and throws them into a swineherd. And they take residence in that swineherd, and the swineherd is run out over a cliff where they die. So this would be a Mark moment. An unridden colt. A chaotic world. The empire of domination flexing its muscles on the other side of town. This is time for Jesus to rise up and give a good beating to evil that is all around. And what do we get from Mark? Nothing. Nothing. No donkey bolting. No crowd out of control. No Jesus yelling. All we hear is that he enters into the temple. He looks around, realizes it's late, and returns to Bethany. What do we do with this? What do we do with this unridden colt and this chaos that should be happening and doesn't happen? Because Mark is very clear that that very meek and mild Jesus with blue eyes and golden and wonderful hair that had a lamb around his shoulder, the image that I was taught when I was in Sunday school, is not his Jesus. The Jesus that Mark writes about is steely, focused, intentional, even confrontational. He is not happy with the empire, and he is certainly not happy with his compatriots who have become lackeys, who have become collaborators, who have become tied to the benefits of their position and their possessions. First two-thirds of Mark are all about that Jesus. But beginning in chapter 11, we begin to understand that sometimes the greatest strength is one's utter calm in the face of chaos. Sometimes our greatest strength is our ability to give fear no quarter, to stand for that which is right, that which is pono, that which is love, that which is aloha, to do so even when all around there is chaos and all around it feels as everything is stacked against you. Somehow, in a moment in which we would expect the greatest of chaos, Jesus becomes the calm in the midst of that chaos. Mark's Jesus is not a one-dimensional Jesus. He is not just confrontational, but he is one in whom the presence of God, that which from the very moment of the beginning of the world, we are told in Genesis chapter 1, in which he takes creation and he brings order out of disorder. The presence of God, that which stands tall and parts the seas of injustice that all might be free. The presence of God, which hears the cries of the exiles and returns them to their liberation. The presence of God, in the midst of all of that, is greater than all of the chaos that surrounds life as we so often know it. In 10 days, we will remember the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Let us not forget that, like the carpenter from Nazareth that he followed, the night before he died, when all around him chaos reigned, he said, "I have been to the mountaintop, and I've had the privilege to look over, and I've seen the promised land," and he says, "I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land." He says, "So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man." This is the Christ's presence in the midst of the chaos, in the midst of all the chaos that the world might want to throw at us. That amidst of all of that chaos, there is that calm that knows that beyond all that seems to overwhelm, there is something even greater. Many of us, I think Ellen said, 50 of us were at the March for Our Lives yesterday. That march unfolded across the country. 6 hours before we were gathered there to march, it was starting in Washington, D.C. Some of you had a chance to watch that march unfolding in front of us. Millions of people, led by young people, most of them under the age of 18, standing up for their lives to end the violence. There were powerful speeches by students of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School and others. And if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go and Google the 6 minute and 45 second speech of Emma Gonzalez, student from that high school. Watch her with tears in her eyes as she begins to recount how her friends would never again complain, would never again joke around, would never again play basketball after school, would never again hang out after class, would never again, and she goes silent. Tears filling her eyes, she stands there silent. The hundreds of thousands that are in front of her are frankly confused. Some begin to urge her on, feeling that at this moment she is so overcome that she cannot speak. Some begin to chant. They are confused. And she waits. And she waits. And she waits. And at 6 minutes and 20 seconds, a little buzzer goes off on her podium. And she makes the point that in that 6 minutes and 20 seconds from which she began to speak, 17 of her classmates and friends and teachers were lost, and another 15 were injured. Her witness yesterday, that silence in the midst of the chaos of a nation that seems to be obsessed with the violence of its guns, this was to me the Christ presence, a calm mixed with a quiet fury in the midst of the chaos of a world that refuses to act. And in the quiet, in the silence of that moment, she demands instead not only that we act, but demonstrates as well that there is something greater, greater than the evil that besets us. You see, ultimately, this is the Christ presence as well. It is not just the Christ presence that Mark presents to us in the first two-thirds of the Gospel of Mark, in which Christ takes on the powers that be, goes face to face, toe to toe with them. There will be battles that will be fought. There will be personal and political battles that will be fought. There will be confrontations in front of all of us. Truth will need to be spoken to power. That which is evil and destructive must be taken on. So I encourage those of you who are so inclined to go to the halls of legislature and testify for that which you know to be the way of love. And understand, when you stand there and you submit your testimony, you will not be alone. For it was the Christ who did the same as he confronted 2,000 years ago an empire of domination, that Christ will stand beside you. Some of you are going to enter into, in the days to come and the years to come, medical procedures, cancer that has invaded, heart conditions that have persisted, and you shall steel yourself, I know, for the task that is ahead. Know as well that as you steel yourself, just like Jesus did in those first two-thirds of the Gospel of Mark, that he will stand beside you as he stood beside those who were in need of healing in his time. Go into the work that defines you, the climate that must be addressed, injustices that must be challenged, abuse and assault that must be named, violence that must not be given a final footing, and know that for such as these moments, Jesus put forward his life and called us to be followers of his way. But remember that when you go into those moments of confrontation, those moments of steeling yourself, those moments of intentionality, there will be a time as well when you are called, just as we see Mark in the last third of his gospel, to a different presence of Christ. You will be called to a calm resolve, a willingness to be a healing balm, a place of peace, to do that which is needed regardless of the odds. And it won't always be in the halls of politics, in the places of our work, in the hospital room. You will be called at times the most unlikely of moments, called to be that Christ of calm and steely resolve in the midst of chaos. I started by telling you about those horses pulling a casket, about an unridden colt. I want to tell you of another horse. Her name was Brave Lady. I was 2 years out of college and was given this chance to work with Missy, Terry and Missy, who ran a ranch in Bondurant, Wyoming. They were friends of a friend of mine, and I was harboring this dream of being a cowboy. Some things never die. So they allowed me to come and work on their horse and cattle ranch, their 750 acres there in Bondurant, Wyoming. They soon learned that I was fairly worthless as a cowboy. And so they began to figure out, well, what can we do? He's going to be with us for the summer. And they assigned me to take care of Brave Lady. Brave Lady was one of their mares that they had, but Brave Lady had, sometime before I got there, got tangled in a barbed wire fence. Her whole left flank of her rear left flank had been absolutely shredded by that barbed wire. The herd had abandoned her, as they would do, because she put the rest of them at risk by being so utterly vulnerable. And so she was out in a far paddock about a half mile away by herself, needing desperately food and salve on her wound in order to be able to heal and survive. And so Terry and Missy said, "Why don't you go out and take care of Brave Lady?" I had no idea. They certainly would not have framed it in this way, but they were asking me to be the presence of Christ to this wonderful animal. So I began twice a day to walk out into that paddock. And at first, Brave Lady, leery of everything and everyone, knowing that her life was held in balance, was scared to death of my presence, would not allow me to approach, would not take any food that I had, would certainly not allow me to touch her and put salve upon her. But over the next few days, I had to find a different way of being, find a way to be calm, find a way to be the presence of the love that I felt for that animal at that moment. And day by day, Brave Lady allowed me to finally approach, to take food from my hand, and ultimately allowed me to begin to put salve on her wound. And I did this for months. And every day, I thought there was a really good chance that I would walk out in that paddock and see her dead on the ground. So deep were her wounds, and so vulnerable was she to the coyotes and the wolves that were in the hills nearby. When I left that ranch, the last thing I did was to go and say goodbye to Brave Lady, having no idea whether or not she would survive another day. I only heard from Terry and Missy, the owners of the ranch, once after I left there. It was a year later. And in the short letter in which they wrote me, thanking me for the time that I had spent with them, which was probably hard for them to say because I'm not sure I did too much value for them, they sent a picture, a Polaroid that had been taken a few days before. It was a Brave Lady, standing strong, standing tall. And next to her was a foal, her foal. She had recovered well enough to join the herd. And when she joined the herd, she had recovered well enough to breed one more time, and she had given birth to this little lady, her foal. Chaos had not held the day. Death and destruction had not reigned. Life and love into that moment had been called, I had been called to. I had no idea, in the midst of the chaos of that moment, whether or not my efforts would be successful or not, but that is not what we are actually called to in the midst of the chaos, is it? What we are called to in the midst of the chaos, just as Christ does that, riding in the midst of that unridden colt into all of that chaos, what we are called to be is the presence of Christ. Knowing that indeed there is something far greater than all that the world will be able to throw at us that will bring life and love in the long run. So in this last week of his life, while chaos reigns all around him, there is calm, an unridden colt that must be rode. The powers that be will rage, and they will take their pieces of his flesh. They will strike fear into his followers, and they will make their point, and it is not an easy journey, and many of us will walk that journey together this week and the many times that we gather. But just because he's calm does not mean he does not suffer the pain of injury, the pain of betrayal, of abandonment, of derision. But the story we know is that the hate and the evil, the chaos that surrounds, that brings these unfortunate events to a reality, shall never be the final word. And so into the midst of the chaos of this world, not knowing ever whether our efforts will finally work out in the way we hope they will, we are called to ride in, to confront that which must be confronted, but to do so and to be so in the midst of the calm and the presence of Christ that knows there is another way, a way greater than the evil that the world wants to throw at us. There is another way, a way of life and a way of love. And it is to that calm, in the midst of the chaos of the world, that we are called. Amen.